Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 356th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change for almost 29 years. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
And we are broadcasting live from the 3CR studio, and we like to acknowledge that we are on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we're revisiting housing policy in Australia and floating or refloating a few ideas. Apartment rents now cost more than half a typical worker's take-home pay in all Australian capital cities. That was the latest Guardian headline that screamed at us this week on Tuesday, based on a report by social housing advocacy group Everybody's Home. And I quote them more extensively: renting a mid-priced unit in any of Australia's capital cities now costs more than half a typical single worker's take-home pay. The report spelled it out even clearer, suggesting, and I continue to quote, people are considered to be in housing stress with greater risk of financial difficulty if their household income falls in the bottom 40%, but they spend over 30% of that on housing. The report shows a single person on $70,000 a year would fall into housing stress if they rented out a flat in any of the capital cities, end of quote. Mm. Apart from the usual and tiresome political platitudes, which when such reports come out and the journalist commentary hits the ether, Mai Azize, a spokesperson for Everybody's Home, bravely, I think it's bravely nowadays, suggested
refreshing.
That's right. Suggested that, and I quote him now, rents have been running away for years, with the pain spreading well beyond people on low incomes. The government needs to focus its next housing reform efforts on renters.
Yeah, and you'd think the issue wouldn't even need publicity.
That's right.
And to be fair, high rents aside, the Victorian government has brought in regulations over recent years that recognise rental properties are long-term homes for many people. So mm-hmm. there's been some good reforms, including things like a ban on no-fault evictions at the end of fixed-term leases, extended notice for rent rises, and being able to do normal things like have a pet and hang up pictures. Yeah.
Mm.
But as you're highlighting, Shark, the biggest problem is that rents are sky high.
They certainly are.
And unmanageable, and also unobtainable for many.
Mm-hmm.
It's eating up people's pay packets, and there's not much left over, and probably a lot of our listeners would already know about that. And God help you if you're trying to pay rent out of Centrelink payments. Anglicare's annual rent study shows that there are very, very few affordable rental properties for people on Centrelink, negligible in many cases. So specifically, Anglicare's 2025 rental affordability snapshot found that across Australia, there were only 352 rentals that were affordable for a person earning a full-time minimum wage.
0.7%.
0.7%.
Unbelievable.
So for people on aged care pension across Australia, there were only 165 rentals, or 0.3%, of rentals were affordable. And then look at the disability pension. 28 rentals were affordable across Australia, which is 0.1%. So you may as well say zero.
So for those two, it's just unbelievable. That is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think, I can't remember the methodology exactly, but I think they're looking at ones that are advertised.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right, they do.
So that, which is the current market rate.
Mm-hmm.
So for people on JobSeeker, including rooms in share houses, there were three rental properties.
Nationwide.
Literally 0% were affordable for a person on JobSeeker across all Australia. That's ridiculous. And no rentals were affordable for a person on youth allowance.
Mm.
And as we know, landlords like to lower their rent if you're a young person. No, that's a
joke. No, they certainly do.
So in response, Anglicare Australia called on the government to return to directly funding and providing housing itself, which is called public housing. That's housing owned and managed by the state. So directly fund and provide housing itself instead of leaving housing to the private sector. Thank you, Anglicare, for saying what we all know.
We certainly do agree with that, and we have shown that in several earlier programs. Whilst the call by everybody's home for limits on rent increases and minimum standards for rental properties will evoke the usual responses from landlords, developers and investors, their suggestions that the federal government now must help everyone to rent a dwelling that is supported by the unions.
Yeah, so help in what way?
Well, the shift from the overwhelming focus on house private ownership being the assumed dream of everyone, and therefore the only policy lever to solve the housing problem, that shift is welcome to have a focus on renting, especially as most policy settings during the last 30 or so years have made that quasi impossible to achieve, house ownership. Or the beginning of house ownership. Also surprising is that...
This one is really refreshing.
Yeah, the ACTU suggested that public housing should increase fivefold and make up one in every 10 new homes built, which is up from the current rate of only one in 50. ACTU's leaving President Michelle O'Neill proposed before leaving that the next focus for the government's housing affordability problems should be renters. And she said, our housing system should reflect that reality that millions of people, both working people, are actually renters.
Yeah, and the ACTU also proposes that landlords be required to offer renters at least 2 years on their lease.
That's right.
So they're advocating for much more public housing stock and also more stable home when renting, wherever you're renting.
That's right. Another good find in the public media comes from the New Daily. On the 8th of July, Simon Küstenmacher from the Demographics Group, who writes a weekly column, published a very thoughtful and informative piece about a couple, actually, pieces in the New Daily about aspects of the housing crisis we usually don't read about or hear much about. And he draws from different pieces of research, particularly also Ahuri's research.
Yeah, Australian Melbourne. Housing, urban... Research Institute.
That's it.
He looks at the pseudo-solution to our housing crisis offered by some of having older people downsize so that younger families can move into their big houses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So what could be simpler?
That's right.
Just all move. But in real life, of course, it doesn't work out that way. And as he says, to quote him, real people don't behave like pieces on a planner's chessboard.
Oh, no.
They have their own preferences, memories, and free will. Survey after survey tells us that older Australians want to age in place, unquote. So, of course, older people want to stay near their services and networks and the people and the places they know.
That's right.
In general, people's situations, relationships, and social contexts are important, which is his point, really.
Mm.
There are a lot of intersecting factors in their preferences, including economic ones. and being able to move to a good place near where you already live.
That's right.
So some couples even remain together rather than split up, as he points out, because they just can't afford housing if they separate.
Indeed.
Which puts another slant on the low divorce rates.
That's correct. That's correct. Kistenmacher examines the differential impacts of the housing affordability problem depending on things like gender, house ownership, and economic power. He also looks at changes in family constellations, for example, downsizing, not just for older people, but for the divorcees, for kids leaving, the gender issue with women earning less than men still after so many years of activism and whatever, and especially important when divorce happens, as Jen already before mentioned, who gets the house, who gets the kids, and so on and so on. Kistenmacher's remarks on the difficulties for policymakers to come up with the optimal combination of policies is really worth listening to. So I quote him. For policymakers, the Ahuri research carries on uncomfortable messages. Housing policy is family policy. It's relationship policy. It's economic autonomy policy. Unaffordable housing doesn't just lock young people out of home ownership, it locks couples into relationships based on financial necessity rather than choice. It locks sole parents into housing insecurity. It locks young people out of independent living. It locks women into dependent relationships. More affordable housing options would give people genuine autonomy to make relationships and living choices based on their well-being rather than on their bank balance, unquote.
So we need holistic policy from our governments rather than simple compartmentalizations that we have, compartmentalizing all the issues.
That's right.
With all the simple solutions and simple media bites,
That's right. And therefore, Kistenmacher's suggestions, they go beyond mere affordability to ways of broadening housing choice, which would do much more than just help Australians buy their dream home. For example, more townhouses, apartments, build-to-rent projects, downsizer housing in areas where downsizers want to live, as Jennifer already said, and smaller dwellings in established suburbs would offer everyone a wider range of options to build households that are appropriate for their stage of life and more specific and changing life conditions. And he offers a great list of examples. Divorcees could remain close to their children. Sole parents could stay connected to existing school and support networks. Young adults could move out without sacrificing half their income. Older Australians could right-size without leaving their communities. More affordable and diverse housing would strengthen labour mobility, improve mental well-being, reduce financial stress, and give Australians something increasingly scarce: the ability to make major life decisions based on preference rather than economic necessity. End of quote.
And we also, Jacques, came across a couple of good articles that go beyond the housing itself, and they talk about the importance of good planning in the places where we live and how we don't have to choose between good planning and building more homes, as some developers would have us.
Exactly.
We should do both, and the best cities in the world do this. As one example, uniform housing density everywhere is not the solution, and we've seen that pseudo-solution in
Absolutely.
The media. Again, we need good planning that provides good amenity for people where they live.
That's right.
And I would add, we don't always have to bribe the private sector to do the government's work with looser planning controls, handouts of public land, or giving private profiteers ongoing revenue streams from the public purse.
And we could really, totally, and we could start with thinking, what the hell do we mean with density? because, you know, when you look at the bulky houses which are being built in my neighborhood, they probably have three people living in them, which is less than who lived in the previous house, which was demolished. Mm-hmm. So, and we also shouldn't leave real estate as one of the three major sources adding to the shifting of capitalism and growth of financial capital without adding needed substance to the housing stock itself, rather than adding to the stock market.
Uh-huh.
So let's just take a little break and listen to the unfortunately departed Dolly Parton, World on Fire.
Burns down. Fire, fire, burning higher. Still got time to turn it all around. Now I ain't one for speaking out much, but that don't mean I don't stay in touch. Everybody's tripping over this or that. What we gonna do when we all fall flat? Think about us. When did we lose? In God we trust. God Almighty, what we gonna do if God ain't listening and we're deaf too? Liar, liar, the world's on fire. What you gonna do when it all burns down? Fire, fire, burning higher. Still got time to turn it all around. Don't get me started on politics. Now how are we to live in a world like this? Greedy politicians, present and past, they wouldn't know the truth if it bit them in the ass. Now tell me, what is truth? Have we all lost sight of common decency, of wrong and right? How do we heal this great divide? Do we care enough to try? Joey got a knife, Janie got a sign to carry in the fight. Marching in the streets with sticks and stones, don't you ever believe words don't break bones. Oh, can't we rise above? Can't we show some love? Do we just give up or make a change?
May Dolly Parton rest in peace and may her voice resound forever. You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today we're talking again about housing, and not just its unaffordability, but also about a series of factors and issues associated with the lack of appropriate housing, appropriate for the diversity of needs housing needs to serve. Indeed, we were building up an argument that the response to the lack of affordable housing needs to be as diverse as the problem series themselves are.
That's right. So, in another interesting article in Pearls and Irritations, Saul Eslake and Adrian Pisarski comment on all the whinging about a slight dip in house prices in Australia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A small correction. All the economists agree, a small correction after years of skyrocketing house prices.
That's right.
These predictable complaints have come from the property industry, the opposition, and what Eslake and Pisarski call the Murdoch-manipulated media.
That's
so that's not really, even just us.
That's a really good formulation, yep.
So also Eslake and Pisarski say, to quote them, parts of the housing industry have shouted about the ruination of the housing market, a drying up of supply, increased rents, robbing the young of wealth, creating opportunities and other calamities. They are the expected squeals of pigs whose snouts have been removed from this trough. Other troughs remain, unquote. Mm. Anyway, a few polls have shown that most people are happy with the dip in house prices, realising it had to happen, including homeowners. So there.
Of course, this avalanche of complaints followed the Albanese government bringing in reforms to capital gains tax and negative gearing, tax arrangements that have been favouring house investors and house possessors.
Yeah, they do say the... I've just lost my train of thought. I don't think Eslake and Pisarskis are saying that the dip in house prices is all due to those reforms. They do say the Albanese government should be heartily congratulated for correcting 26 years of poor policy, which has added to inflationary measures on house prices in Australia, even while other inflationary factors remain. And I might add that came from the PM Howard government's housing policy.
Yeah, that's right. One of these remaining factors being the government's first homeowner grants, which just serve to raise house prices, which larger and longer loan periods for the purchases.
Yeah, that's right, which is what would also happen, incidentally, if people were able to use their superannuation to buy a house. It would just raise house prices, funneling the money into people making profits from housing, and people wouldn't have superannuation when they retire anyway.
Exactly, absolutely. But significantly, Eslake and Pisarski, they emphasise that we need to increase our spending on what they call social housing. And we need to start taxing properly to fund such programmes.
Which is a key underpinner. We need to start taxing properly.
Yeah. Again, they are worth quoting on this particular point. In a world where Australia can commit $350 billion to a defence program, AUKUS, we ought to be able to find an additional $10 billion for social housing. In particular, it would build the capital base of community providers and enable them to further leverage what federal and state governments have been providing. Eslake is really not in favour of public housing, as we already know.
Yeah, well, do we? Really? Well, why is that?
A couple of years ago, I remember one of those debates where he was part of, he suggested that it smells too much of state intervention and supply, and that therefore the next government who doesn't believe in it could just basically do away with it again. And he thinks that community housing is more durable because under the control of another entity, whatever that may be. But I do have to say that I remember that from an earlier, as I said, earlier debate a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so, well, just to rebut that, Jacques, of course, I would say that's the old neoliberal argument that the private sector does it best,
that's
right?
Yeah, yep.
And actually, we've seen a lot of the housing problems coming about from when we stopped building public housing.
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah. And we see how the whole neoliberal privatisation project's gone anyway. Mm-hmm. So the federal government, I remember a few decades ago, it had the great idea of not building more public housing and instead giving people rent assistance that goes into the pockets of private landlords.
That's
so
right.
I don't think a lot of people would be aware or remember that association. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that rent assistance never kept up with rent increases. Mm-hmm. And now we find we need our public housing more than ever. So I'm definitely with the ACTU.
Same here.
And we've talked quite a few times about the vital role of public housing in our housing mix before. As you know, in October 2020, we had Dr. Kate Shaw from the University of Melbourne really explaining the difference between public housing and community housing and making the case for more state-built, state-managed public housing in Australia. And we've had other guests on. We've had Caitlin Butters, CEO of Victorian Public Tenants Association, on the program. That was April last year. And she was also explaining why community housing can't or shouldn't replace
public housing.
Public housing.
That's right, yeah.
So we've had quite a few people on the program talking about that.
Mm-hmm. So people not on top of the term social housing. It covers community housing and public housing together. So our community housing is really, in general, a quasi-corporatized model running on corporate for-profit principles, even while technically not-for-profit. Their property portfolios, they enable them to borrow from banks as well as secure revenue stream from a stable tenant base. So community housing tenants can be cherry-picked by the organization interested in safeguarding its bottom line and revenue stream. And most of them
and
do.
And most of them do cherry-pick.
They certainly do. That's correct.
Tenants are more easily evicted. Mm-hmm. They charge more rent in community housing. They're not subject to Victorian human rights legislation that public housing tenants are protected by. And I have to say, I've personally witnessed all of that. Also with the push by state governments to transition from state-owned and managed public housing to the more corporatised model of community housing, we're losing a lot of valuable public land in prime locations that we'll never get back.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, both you and I have worked in or certainly with the housing sector in those ways, and we have seen numerous losses in that regard. So funding for alternative forms of house ownership should actually be developed, and we also had programs on that. Like, for example, cooperative housing, co-housing, housing trusts, and eco-villages, just to name a few of those other options.
Yeah, and we need really major changes in regulation to support that, because a lot of people have tried and fallen on all the
And because the absence of. So whilst all of this may not reach sufficient overall dwelling supply, Esleg and Pitarski suggest that adding to the levels of social housing for those most in need remains imperative. States have been providing additional funding to social and affordable housing on their own, but they just could go much further, they suggest.
Yeah, and again, he's talking about social housing, which is the umbrella for community housing. Yeah. And public housing, which, by the way, Everybody's Home campaign does as well. I don't often hear them talking, advocating for public housing.
That's right. And they actually conclude both. It's an agenda Labour should outline, not as a done deal.
So who suggests that?
But that was Pitarski and Esleg.
Yeah.
You know, it's an agenda Labour should outline, not as a done deal, but as a conversation with the Australian people, which would allow sensible proposals to be brought to successive elections. Now, that would be a change, wouldn't it?
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Thoughtful debates about things that matter.
That's right.
Including reforms to our tax system to pay for the things we need to do to support the population.
Totally.
And that could at least be considered by a Labor government that has a large majority in Parliament and the opportunity to make real change.
Yes, rather than doing what they are doing and support neoliberal policies.
And feeding us media lines.
By implication, yes.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Thanks for tuning in.
And I should add for listeners that the Cities for Everyone event that was due to take place at Borderlands on Saturday, the 29th of August, has been cancelled. And it will be rescheduled, and we will keep you posted.
That's right, because of sickness, basically. Thanks for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you would like to send any comments, please email borderlandsinfo@borderlandscooperative.net. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, to finish this program today, please enjoy Milk and Manna by King Stingray.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.